Hey, everybody, this is the Interstate of Music podcast, and I am your host, Jeff Peterson. And with me today, I've got my guest, Adam Cole. He is the director of Willow Music and Truer MU. He's also a songwriter, from what I've been told, and I want to hear a little bit more about that. But what I really want to do is welcome Adam to the podcast first. Welcome.
Thank you, Jeff.
It's awesome to have you. Thanks for taking the time. And what I really want to get into is kind of where you were at and what got you to what you're doing today. Because honestly, we can sit here and talk about your current project, but I want to kind of know so that the listeners and viewers can kind of find out if there's similarities and what your journey has been, something that they can connect to. So let's start that connecting process of what you've been up to. And what did songwriter kind of start earlier on in your career, way before the whole Willow Music and Truer MU?
Oh, absolutely. I started writing songs when I was about 15 or 16, which was kind of late. I think a lot of songwriters get their first idea they want to write when they're 10 or 11. But I kind of caught into
hell,
it by the
who
end.
Who the hell
of
writes
teens.
A song at 10 years old? People are writing songs at 10?
You know, Lennon and McCartney were, the okay. Beatles were writing songs at 13, 14. A lot of guys, you know, I didn't even care that much about music until I was, I don't know, 16 or 17. It hit me really late. But when it hit me hard.
Okay.
And I was also kind of mad because when I tried to write a song, I couldn't. And I didn't like that at all. Like, what? I should be able to do this. And so I spent the next 30 years trying to figure out how to write good songs.
Well, and I think that's such an important thing to say, because honestly, anybody that has music as part of their life, and I mean, like, they're driving to work, they've got a certain channel on, they're listening to. Nowadays, you've got the whole Spotify and Pandora and all this kind of stuff, and you've got your channels, and you're clicking on all the music that you like, because it's kind of mood based. It's like, what mood am I in? What do I want to listen to? Kind of that passion side of it. And I think at some point in all of our lives, with the different journeys we've been on, the different moods, the different things that have happened in our life, I do think so many of us are like, I think I could write a song. Listen to that song. I think I can do that. And some of it starts from poetry in a grade school class. Some of it just comes from really wanting to write a song because it's just cool. So at what point was it more of an influence from school, from others, or was it just like, I want to do it because I think it'd be cool?
Well, first of all, I should say that I was writing poetry from the time I was about 5 or 6. So I was really good at that. Like, stupid good at it. Like, I just wrote something and my teachers were like, wow, that's amazing. So I figured songwriting would be about the same, you know?
Well, let me pause this because I'm gonna do this, the little self-brag, because yeah. I thought I was a pretty good poet when I was in my younger years. And I'm gonna give you one of my poems that to this day I still remember. I don't know what grade it was, but I wrote this poetry book. It was a class project, and you had to write these multiple poems in it and kind of illustrate them, right? You know, so it's got the hole punch, the three hole punch, and the yarn that holds it together, create the cover, the whole thing of this poetry book, right? I think it was like, God, I don't want to say it was fourth grade because this could be really like second grade material here, but I'm gonna share it to the world. So are you ready for the poem that I actually remember I wrote?
Hit me, Jeff.
I'm going to. This is so, I don't know if this is a good idea for me. All right, so here it is. This is deep, right? This is deep. You got to put some thought to this. If you think about a pencil and all that it can do, it really is amazing. It can add up 2 + 2.
Oh, wow. Now that's good.
Right?
I like that.
So it's good.
It's got the rhythm. It means something. That's
pretty good. Yeah, put it to music and T-Swizzle could make this a hit.
Yeah. Well, that's a different topic, I think.
You're right. So I don't have any X's that I need to write about. So not back then, at least. So I get the poetry thing. And right. I would wake up in the middle of the night and I'd have to have a notepad and a pen next to my bed, because I would wake up in full thought of poems and I'd have to write them down. Otherwise I'd forget them when I went back to sleep. So I don't know where that came from. I was not some like, it was weird that I was like into this poetry thing, and it stopped though. It stopped.
Wow. Well, it never stopped for me. But what happened was that whereas I wasn't all that interested in music when I was a kid, you know, I liked words and I read books, But then I got into this band with some friends of mine, about 15 or 16, and they started making me listen to the Police a lot and to the Eagles. And all of a sudden, awesome. I was playing other people's songs. Yeah, yep. It was a hilarious band. I was the bass player, but I played the bass on this Steinway piano in our home. That was the bass. So okay. I sang and I played the bass. And we had a drummer and a guitar player, and that was it. And, you know, at some point I started thinking about, you know, I'd like to write a song. This is cool. These songs are cool. Could I write some songs for our band? Sure. And like I said, it didn't initially go very well for me. I was like, usually when I want to write, the words just kind of flow, but this song thing is sticking me somehow.
Right. And so when you started playing, did you start with the piano? Is that your instrument?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I had been playing piano since I was six also. Yeah.
Okay. And do you play any other instruments?
Do I now? I do now. I'm a music educator, so we learn them all. I mean, I play the organ and the guitar and the ukulele and the recorder and blah, 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 and I sing. So
cool. You know, so cool. What was the name of that band, by the way? this is always fun to ask this question.
Okay. So we settled on the name Close Enough, because if it wasn't your favorite band, then it was close enough.
That's fantastic. I'm so glad I didn't have to ask the next question to find out why Close Enough.
Right.
That's fantastic. That's really clever. I love it.
Yeah, thank you. My first album, which you can find on, if you go to Apple Music, you can hear us. All the original tracks we eventually recorded are on that first album called What Was Once Close Enough. So if you're curious about our first band.
I'm curious. I'm going to go back and listen. That's fantastic. So you're talking about being an educator.
Yeah.
At what point? So you're in high school, you're doing this, you know, you're playing a band and you know, doing some things that are close enough. And so all of a sudden it starts to get to a point where you've got to decide what you're going to do. And are you going to go to college or you're not going to go to college? What was that process and what got you to, you know, through to being an educator?
Oh, well, first of all, I never wanted to be a teacher at all. I thought these teachers are working too hard. What a miserable life. No, thank you. No, no, no.
Summer's off isn't worth it. You know,
no.
Got to deal with these kids all day. Yeah, right.
I thought they're crazy. No way.
Right.
Going to college was never an option. It was always assumed I would go to college. I figured I was going to go to college to be a writer, which I did. I mean, I did become a writer, but
you're going to be like a journalist. You want to write a book, a novelist.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like I said, poetry. I was also writing books since I was 12. I sat in my dining room with a typewriter and I was working on the Great American Novel at a young age.
So were you into creating your own story, or were you taking a journey through history of what happened and rewriting kind of it your way?
I wanted to be the next J.R.R. Tolkien. That's what I was after.
Unbelievable. How many books have you written?
Oh, at this point, probably more than 20.
Unbelievable. Good for you, man.
That's
a different journey, because, I mean, I've gone through wanting to write books, and then all of a sudden you start it. And again, kind of when you're sitting at that piano trying to write a song, you're like, this is, all of a sudden it got hard. As soon as I sat down at the piano, yeah, this is hard. And for me, it was like, as soon as I sat down to actually try to write a book, I was like,
right.
I don't have anything good to write. You know, why would I write a book? So it's really difficult. So to put out 20 books is, and they don't all have to be, here's the thing. They don't even have to be good books. And I'm not saying your books aren't good. It is hard to write a bad book. Yeah.
I'm not saying that it wasn't hard. Because I've written so many books doesn't mean it wasn't hard. It's always hard. It's constant. You have to be able to basically, with anything, songs, books, any kind of creative endeavor, you really have to be able to put up with a certain level of resistance. And if you can continue to push through that resistance, you'll eventually come up with something either by yourself or with help.
And it really kind of parallels to just your drive to do anything. I mean, your career, your education, just a passion, a hobby. It really does come down to personal drive. And you sit there and you look at people and people complain, oh, I just can't do this. I haven't done that. It's like, and you look at them, you're like, I think it's kind of, you just don't really wake up in the morning wanting to do it bad enough, you know, is really kind of what it ends up being. And I think so much comes just from getting that personal drive or an outside influence that's just saying, you can do this. Come on, let's go. Let's do this.
Right.
And kind of dragging you through a process to get the motor running, so to speak.
Yeah, I try not to take too much credit for my productivity because just like Bruce Springsteen said in his biography, you know, he says there's this, you got to have that fire that just won't stop burning. And I've just got that thing inside me that just keeps me going. I don't have anything to do with it. I'm not taking responsibility for it. I don't have a great work ethic. I just can't stop. So since I can't stop, I don't stop.
That's awesome. So when you ended up going to college, because that was just part of the plan, mm-hmm. where did you end up going and why?
Well, I went to Oberlin College, and that's up in Ohio, just I think it's west of Cleveland by about 40 miles. Now, I was attracted to Oberlin because it had a conservatory in it, a world-class music school. But I had no intention of going to the music school. I just wanted to go there and play the piano while I was there. Well, once I got to Oberlin, I was an English major. I graduated with an English major. Okay. But I was surrounded by these world-class musicians, and it lit a fire in my head. It sparked me. And I was, again, I got mad because I felt like somewhere deep inside, I felt like I was one of them. I was a musician. Like I had something in me that I could express, but my abilities were so poor. They were putrid. I couldn't play the piano hardly at all. I could sing some. I'd barely written anything, maybe a few songs. The songs on the album that I mentioned, I wrote a lot of those when I was in college and came back in the summers and we recorded them. So at the time I got to college, I hadn't even written but a song or two. So I was very frustrated, and more, I spent more and more time in that conservatory taking classes, hanging out. So that by the end of the time I was there, everybody thought I had graduated from the music school,
that's
even
awesome.
Though I did not.
So just the passion of wanting to master the instrument to a level that you felt that you got it to where it needed to be.
Well, that was the plan. It took me another 25 years to do that.
Right.
I got excited by jazz. I studied with a man named Neil Creakey, who was nice enough to teach me, even though I wasn't in the jazz department. And I left college thinking I was going to come home and become a professional piano player. I got a job with the Atlanta Ballet playing classes, and I got a jazz trio going in the city. And I kept studying, and I just started going from there. And I wrote songs on the side the whole time.
And the English major aspect of finishing college,
yeah,
where did that come into play for you?
Oh, well, I continued to write as well. I mean, the book writing was always kind of a parallel track. You know, I had some time to write. You know, I was gigging at night, so during the day,
sure,
I had my time to write. And I wanted to write some books. I had books in my head, and I needed to get them out. And some of them took 15 years to write. It took me a long time. So, you know, I just kept on going. And being an English major made it possible for me to read classics like Dickens and, you know, Shakespeare and things like that and know what I was reading and get the benefit of the mastery of those people.
The knowing what you're reading it, when you're talking about those authors and those books, I mean, that is an important aspect of it because you can go in and just read a whole bunch of words and kind of think you might know what's going on, but you've got to know on those authors, you need to get it a little bit deeper in order to really kind of hold on to it. So how are you paying the bills? I mean, if it takes 15 years to write a book, you're not paying the bills with the 15-year process of a book. You're gigging at night. But I also know how much like those gigs at night probably paid. You know, how were you like grabbing on, building kind of, a rent, food, just kind of the normal everyday expenses in life? What did you turn to kind of get through it and get you to that next place in your life?
Well, I was fortunate in that when I graduated college, I had a little bit of family money. My expenses were low. You know, I didn't spend a lot of money. And so I had enough family money to kind of bridge the gap between the gigs I was playing and what I needed to spend. And I didn't really have any real money trouble until I started a family. And that's when I had to give up all the freewheeling and think about seriously a career. And that's where the education came in.
I love that. So where are you teaching? What are you doing? What is that like on a day-to-day basis? How does that just make you feel?
Okay. Could you repeat that question? Cause I'm not sure I understand.
So as an educator, so what level are you teaching? Like what age level, Like, where are you teaching? And when you wake up as an educator, how is that making you feel just personally? Is it, hey, I've got the skill set. It's what I need to do for my family, and I've got the skill sets to do it. Or is this an unbelievably fulfilling endeavor?
Okay. Well, I was a public school educator first for 11 years, a choral director, middle school and elementary school.
Cool.
And that was that was a real pay the bills time. That was
yep.
when my wife, who is the owner and director of the Willow School, which is where my current school is, she was building that. And so I was holding down the fort, you know, paying, making sure we had insurance and working
yeah.
in the public schools. And that was really very difficult.
Yep.
It's an immensely difficult life to be a public school teacher. So from there, eventually I transitioned into creating my own piano studio. The Adam Cole School of Music became the Grant Park Academy of the Arts, became Willow Music. And I merged my school, Willow Music, with my wife's business, the Willow School. And that's where I am today. And we teach children from 4 years old all the way up to adults 99 years old. I teach them how to play the piano and occasionally how to sing and how to write. I have a guitar teacher, violin teacher, drum teacher.
Thank you so much for being honest about, you know, the public school, you know, that the difficulty in the, and, you know, because it's hard to be a teacher for anything. It's hard to wake up when you've got a whole bunch of students that have their own personal agendas for that day on what they're going to care about, not care about, how they're going to behave through it all. And then you've also got the bureaucracy of just the entity of itself, you know, whether it's a school board, whether it's the parents. It is such an underappreciated, you know, skill
yeah.
and career path that so many of us, I think we learned so much during the pandemic of what parents went through, having to kind of homeschool during these times and stuff. But it's still, you know, even the ones that are most passionate can still go into a situation that is so challenging. It takes a little bit of that fire out of them and it becomes such a grind. So thank you for being honest about that, because
sure.
so many think they're just going to like keep saying, oh, it's amazing. I'm a teacher. It's what I always wanted to be. But honestly, it's hard. You know, it's just a hard mm-hmm. thing. So cool for you to kind of transition into exactly what you knew you and your wife wanted it to be. So cool.
Thanks. Yes. And that's all the credit goes to my wife, who really built the space for us to move into. She's amazing.
So where are you located?
We are in Decatur, just east of the city of Decatur, about a mile east of the city of Decatur. If you're not familiar with Atlanta, Decatur is what once was a small town just east of Atlanta that became kind of a huge center, a metro center, and kind of an alternative city. There's a number of those around Atlanta. Decatur is maybe one of the prettiest, and it's booming now, and we are just shy of that.
That's awesome. So it's really, as far as the people that are coming to you to learn and all of that, where do you find yourself, where do they seem to gravitate from? You know, is it the parents that say, I really want my kid to learn the piano? It's just, I want him to learn music. I think it's important, well-rounded. It's not taught in the schools. I think it's important. Where does it seem the students are coming to you from what purpose?
Mm-hmm. Many of the parents come to me and they simply just have this idea that they want their child to learn music. Some of them either took piano lessons as a kid and gave up on it and they're disappointed in themselves, or they just feel like it's something they want their kids to have. What's interesting is that many of the students that come to me, they're either exceptional in some way. Well, they're all exceptional, but they may be exceptional in that they're, you know, incredibly intelligent, incredibly sensitive, and have difficulties because of that. A lot of my students have, you know, difficulties with their self-image, with getting things done. They're hypercritical. And it becomes my job to help them develop as people while I'm developing them as musicians, which is the thing I most love. How can we help you? Just as becoming a true pianist helped me become who I am, can I help you become who you are and maybe shed some of this self-criticism, shed some of the destructiveness that's eventually going to grow up into something difficult for you as an adult? Can we get rid of it now?
So how much do you think you grabbed from your public school teaching experience that is a benefit to where you're at right now and what you do every day?
Public school teaches you some very powerful things because you don't have time to mess around. You learn very quickly to streamline your teaching, to figure out what is going to be effective, and to stop enjoying the sound of your own voice, frankly, because kids pick up on that right away. Right. So if you're standing in front of a class and you're starting to try to talk like somebody from a movie, the kids in about 30 seconds will tune you out. Someone will throw something across the room. So every word's got to count. You have to be talking to them, and you have to have your act together. You have to be prepared before you teach and know what it is you're trying to teach them and how best to do it. So I'm immensely grateful for that experience.
And I've got to think, you know, when you're talking about public school, you get all kinds of students. You get the ones that are really trying to, you know, be the best student possible. You got the ones that are just like, man, I can't stand being here. I don't want to be here. Some days they just don't show up because they don't want to be there. And you got all those middle of the roads out there. So I've got to think some of this is also giving you the ability to, every student that you have right now, you're able to kind of quickly figure them out as they are as individuals, as quickly as they're figuring you out.
Good point. Yeah. And I didn't think about them figuring me out. I'm not sure to what extent they do that, but they trust me.
Well,
I think
you're right.
There is some.
Hey, if they're going to trust you, they figured you out, you know, because let me put it this way, in today's world, I mean, there's so much you've got to earn trust before they share. So I think for them to trust you and actually share with you, they've bought into an aspect of you that they truly feel is authentic enough for them to share it, right?
That's nice. I guess maybe the trust is built by my not really assuming I know what they are or who they are. You've suggested that I can maybe hone in on who they are quickly. That may be true, but it's more likely that I'm really just listening to them as much as I can. And, you know, I may say something like, I think you're the kind of person who beats himself up a lot. And maybe we want to watch out as you're doing this to find a way to not do that. But I wouldn't just say, you beat up on yourself too much. Stop it. More like, is that true about you? Do you think you're beating yourself up a lot? And they go, yeah. And so it's that listening that develops the trust, you know.
And asking questions to try to get somewhere. I mean, asking, you know, not some kind of like, pointed questions, but just kind of bringing them into the fold and having them feel as though they're part of the conversation instead of just being talked to.
Well, they are. They have to be.
They have to be.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's boring for me. You know, I mean, I really want to engage with them and, you know, for us to go somewhere together, you know, with them taking the lead, if possible.
Well, and what is the purpose process of your education, of what the way that you do it? You've got a student at whatever age they are. What do you give them as far as a purpose on why they're there, what's the next step, and all of the rest of it so that they stay engaged?
It's great. So first of all, I teach all my students both classical, how to read music, and how to play jazz. We start with the blues. So I make sure that they are improvising and making up their own music the entire time, that there's always an aspect of them expressing themselves with as little interference as possible, in addition to having to learn what someone else has done. So, you know, they get better and better at that. I try to work my lessons so that they make steady progress with all of that. They become better players on a daily basis, and they can see it. As they see they're getting better, they continue, and they want to continue to do it. But there's also that aspect of, you know, just watching themselves overcome some of their own issues, maybe their desire to rush, to hurry the learning. You know, maybe they start to see, yeah, why am I in such a hurry to get through this piece of music? Because he's just going to give me another one when I'm done. Why do I want to rush? You know, why am I always looking at him every time I mess up? He's not going to hurt me. You know, why am I doing that? And these are, as they over a couple of years, they start to see themselves as different people. And I think they like that. I know I do.
Right. I totally agree with that. So let me ask you a quick question. You talk about the style of music and the way you teach it. What if you've got a kid that wants to learn the Police, the Eagles, and the Beatles? Are they kind of like, hey, I don't want to learn blues? What if they say that to you?
Well, so I haven't really had that experience yet. Okay. If they did, here's what I would say. I would say, you know, that's great. I think we need to be sure you can do that. Right now, if you were to try to learn some of those songs, we would go two directions. One is I'd be putting music in front of you that is really easy and doesn't sound anything like those songs, and you won't enjoy it. Or two, I'll be dropping these arrangements in front of you that are ridiculously hard, and you won't be able to play them. So what we should do, if you'll allow me, is let me improve your reading and your piano skills for a while. And when they get to a certain point, then we can go there and we can learn whatever you want. And that's usually how I approach it.
That's fantastic, because I love the fact that you're so open-minded and so understanding of the individual versus, but still realizing the importance of the baseline of what they need to kind of have. And I think so much of the educators that are out there and also the students, understanding the importance of the baseline is really what gets you to the finish line, so to speak.
Yes. Yes. There really has to be a balance between, my way or the highway versus whatever you want, kid. It's got to be somewhere in the middle, and not just for their sakes, but for your sake as well. You know, you have to be able to steer the ship. You got to go faster than the current. If you're on a raft and you're going down a river, you have to be able to go faster than the current or you can't steer. So, you know, if I'm going to steer this kid down these rapids, I have to be able to, you know, stay ahead of them and know where we're going next. So if all I'm doing is following what they want, you know, basically the current is taking me wherever it goes. And that could be somewhere safe and it could be somewhere rocky. And if it goes somewhere rocky, they're going to quit, you know.
Right, no doubt.
Well, you know, what do I need you for? I, you know, we just learned all these songs and I can do this by myself and this isn't that fun. Bye-bye. You know,
right.
But if they feel like I've got something that they can use and still need, we keep going. So there's a balance there.
I love it. Adam, thank you so much for being part of the podcast and
sure.
sharing your story and giving us a true educator's perspective on the important things about the process, but also the important things about the individuals that we come in contact with and need to kind of reach out to and understand. Thank you so much for sharing. I'm excited to go and listen to some of those songs, but more excited to kind of keep tabs on where you guys go with Willow Music and everything else that you've got, the, you know, True RMU and everything else. So thank you so much for being part of the podcast and sharing your journey.
Thank you very much, Jeff. See you next time.
You bet. This has been the Interstate of Music podcast, and our special guest today was Adam Cole. Peterson out.